Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, thank you, Don Fortney, for that opening number. Welcome to another exciting episode of Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. Of course, I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie, along with the coolest of all co-hosts in all of BTR land, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Cool Mike.
Good afternoon. These introductions are getting better and better each time. Welcome,
that's
everybody.
Your ego.
Glad you are here on this Tuesday, August the 14th. It's 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and wherever you are, welcome. Got an exciting show planned today, Annie.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We have two excellent guests, one who's sitting on hold very patiently, Cameron Tilbury, who is a promoter, and we also will have Kurt Adams, who's running for the House of Representatives from Arizona. He'll be joining us a little bit later. But, of course, we have to start off with our opening announcements, and I'll save the trouble of having people listen to my voice, and I'll let Gary Sinise do the opening for us. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Please join me this September 15th when, along with the Lieutenant Dan Band, I will return to Beaufort, South Carolina for the third annual Lieutenant Dan Weekend for an evening of fun, music, and show of support for our nation's military and their families. We'd also like to invite you or your company to join us in showing thanks to our nation's most severely wounded veterans by honoring a hero of your choice with a freedom flag. These freedom flags will be flown at the concert and are a perfect way to honor a special veteran in your life. 100% of the tax-deductible donation for a freedom flag will be used by all the Volunteer Independence Fund to support those most severely wounded veterans of the War on Terror. Myself and the rest of the Lieutenant Dan Band look forward to seeing you all once again this September, and I thank you for your support.
Okay, that's an organization, the Independence Fund, and the Lieutenant Dan Weekend Number 3 is a organization that is really dear to our heart. 99 cents of every dollar you donate goes directly to the veterans. There's no overhead. There's no offices to pay for, no salaries. So no one gets any money except for the veterans and for the actual things they need, such as, you know, renting the park for the concert or materials to help them build the house or to buy the wheelchairs that they have done for these veterans. So please go to LDW3, that's the number 3.com, or go to independencefund.org. Got $5 sitting in your pocket? Don't buy the beer. Just go to LDW3.com or independencefund.org and make the donation. The Lieutenant Dan weekend is going to, not weekend, it's Lieutenant Dan week, is going to be from September 9th through the 15th with Lieutenant Dan Band playing on the 15th. And I will be there. And we will be broadcasting live from Cat Island Golf Course on the 14th, the day before Friday. And we will have some of the wounded veterans from that group on with us again. So
we should actually, too, during the week, we should play the last time we did a function like this. We should actually play that episode like on a Thursday so people can hear. This is a very touching and very moving type function. The people who, at this last time, the people who came up and talked to Annie were wounded veterans. You would never know it just from their voices. I mean, whether they had arms cut off or lost limbs, or they had personalities and they had just this happiness and excitement about them. That really is inspiring. So with that said, I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, these truly are warriors, and they're fighting to regain their independence. And when you look at what they have to struggle through and how they look at life with such joy and gratefulness, and these are men and women that have volunteered to protect our country, to protect our freedoms and our liberties, and they have undergone some of the most horrific things. And to see them just saying, I don't care, I'm going to keep on surviving, I'm going to keep on fighting, and they do. And this is why the Independence Fund is so important and why we have the Lieutenant Dan Week here. As again, it's the third annual one, and it's a worthy cause. So please, just take a moment and make a donation over there. Those who have been listening to our show know that for the last several months we've been doing this. We take a killed in action member of the service, and we dedicate the show to it. And my co-host chose this person, and it's Mark Andrew. Now, Mike, you're going to have to help me with the last name. Mike? I think I lost my
phone. I muted myself. I was munching on a chip. I'm sorry. It's Mark.
Andrew. Yes, and the last name?
Arizmendez.
Okay. I didn't want to mispronounce it.
No,
okay.
I was pronouncing it from the video. But the problem is most of these people were Hispanic and some rolled their R's. And so, it's like, geez. But anyway, yes. He's of Gilbert, Arizona. I picked Gilbert because that was very close to Kirk Adams, who's going to be our guest in the second half. It was very close to him. And just the tragedy of the whole scenario of how this, he and the people they were with, you know, even in combat, these people just without thought will give their life to save a comrade, to save a partner. It is unbelievable. Not only when you're getting shot at and bombs are blowing up, you think you would be thinking about survival, let alone these people, again, so unselfishly, unthoughtlessly, they're thinking about their teammates, their comrades, their friends. Unbelievable.
All right,
go ahead.
All right, Mark Andrew Arizmendez was killed in action July 6, 2010, at Kalat, Afghanistan, of wounds sustained when insurgents attacked their vehicle with an IED. They were assigned to the 1st Battalion, 4th Infantry Regiment out of Germany. Also killed was Specialist Roger Lee, 26, of Monterey, California, and Private First Class Michael S. Friedheim, 19, of Louisville, Kentucky. This is from the Arlington National Cemetery, Anaheim, California. Army Staff Sergeant Mark A. Arizmendez was remembered as an energetic and sensitive man with a can-do attitude, a doting husband and father, flash his wry, simple grin and make everyone feel instantly comforted. He loved the Army and all the opportunities and challenges it afforded him and was transformed by those experiences, said his older brother Al, during a memorial service at St. Boniface Catholic Church in downtown Anaheim. The shadows of veterans lined the walkway leading to St. Boniface Church in Anaheim as they gathered to show support for a fallen soldier. Army Staff Sergeant Mark A. Arizmendez, his brother George, said he was deeply touched by more than the two dozen supporters holding flags. "He came back to us a new and better man," Al told 200 mourners. "He found it comfortable, exciting, and the Army offered him ways to teach. He was richer in that way, more than many people I know." Arizmendez lost his life July 6, 2010, in Kalat, Afghanistan, when the vehicle he was traveling in was bombed by insurgents. Two of his comrades, Specialist Roger Lee and Private First Class Michael S. Prideholm, were also killed in the blast. Family members said Arizmendez had a transforming effect on their lives as they watched a rabble-rouser who nearly joined a gang in middle school grow up to become a focused, compassionate man, intensely devoted to military service and his family. "I'm going to dedicate the few things in my life that mean something to me, to him," said Al. "I wanted him right there in the front of my mind." From now on, Al said, every time he smiles for a photo, he will say, "Hey, Chief," instead of "Cheese," in honor of the standard greeting his brother used. Arizmendez's mother, Amelia, sat in the front row and kept her hands clasped in silence, tearful prayer throughout much of the service. She attends St. Boniface weekly. The charity organization. Arizmendez's two brothers and two
We actually lost Annie for a second there. I'm sure she will call back.
Yes, oh, Skype's just knocking out.
Well, Skype, you're back. So go ahead, continue. We're continuing
Sorry
with the music.
About that.
Oh,
all right.
No big deal. I gotta be a little biased here, though. You gotta love a man when there are just people in this. I mean, just total strangers in this city lining up for his body out of respect. God, it's just so touching.
It is. It is. His two brothers and two sisters participated in the Mass, reading biblical passages and offering up prayers as mourners quietly dried their eyes. "He was willing to lay down his life for each of us, for the friends whom he knew by name and the millions he did not," said Father Timothy Fryer during the Mass. "We gave thanks for Mark and all others who were willing to lay down their life for us." Anaheim Mayor Kurt Pringle and Anaheim Police Chief John Welter were among the guests Saturday, and about 25 members of the Boniface Choir stood in the back, leading mourners in singing hymns, including "On Eagle's Wings" during communion. "And he will rise you up on eagle's wings," the mourners sang, "bear you on the breath of dawn, make you shine like the sun, and hold you in the palm of his hand." Mark Andrew Arizmendez was born March 30th, 1980 in Hollywood, the youngest of five children. He grew up in Monterey Park, but his mother transferred him to St. Catherine's Military Academy in Anaheim after he was nearly initiated into a local gang in middle school. The family eventually moved to downtown Anaheim to be closer to St. Catherine's, and Arizmendez completed 7th and 8th grade there. He attended Shira High School in Monticello, then completed an automotive certificate program in Boston College. Though he initially had little interest in military service, he decided he wanted to join the Army when he was 17. He enlisted in the Army about 6 months after graduating high school. Al Arizmendez said one of his demands upon enlisting was he be sent to Germany, the home of his favorite car, the Volkswagen. He was signed to the 1st Battalion, 4th Infantry Regiment in Germany, where he met his wife Barbara, a native of Germany. They married secretly without telling his family in advance, and together had two children, Jenny and Justin. He completed a one-year tour of duty in Iraq in 2005. His deployment to Afghanistan was his first. Mourners remembered him as Goofy independent-minded teacher who loved to rebuild cars in his mother's garage, especially old VWs. His mother still has 1970s Golf and Beetle in her garage. Family members also remembered Arizmendi's unwavering devotion to his wife and kids. Those sentiments are echoed by his wife, Barbara, whose heartfelt postings on Facebook just a week before his death poignantly illustrate that love. "Didn't sleep all night, and now I'm so tired," she wrote on June 29th, alternating between German and English. "I miss my husband. You know how it is. I sometimes have such nights when he's not there." About 12 hours later, she posted again, this time with happier news. "I knew I was going to sleep good tonight, but now even better. Mark called. It felt so good to talk to him." After the service, Al remembered how his kid brother, 14 years his junior, referred to himself as Cram, which is Mark, spelled backwards, and wore baggy pants, listened to speed metal music, and drank Monster energy drinks. "My brothers and sisters and I are planning a Cram-a-palooza," he said, referring to the famous Lollapalooza. "You're going to drink Monster metal." He is survived by his wife Barbara, children Jenny and Dustin, mother Amelia, father Albert, and siblings Al, George, Ada, and Jackie. That is Staff Sergeant Arizmendi. And
may
for that,
rest in peace. And as always, we're dedicating a song. Annie, I do have to say before we go to the break, twice you said Monster. Oh, help us.
I'm sorry. He doesn't know
that. That's not good.
But this song goes out to Staff Sergeant Arizmendi. It's My Name is America by Todd Allen Herndon. And you can find this song also up on YouTube and on Todd Allen's website, and you can download it for free. This is Todd Allen Herndon, My Name is America.
That's the key.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames. Taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me,
Okay, that's My Name is America by Todd Allen Herndon, and that's dedicated to all the brave men and women out there protecting our liberties for us. I want to welcome aboard.
What a great
aboard.
Dedication, too. That was just...
Yeah,
you know, these people are so unselfish. It is amazing that in a world where people say, well, you know what, I had to do the move that was best for me. Here's people that don't even know this word, and they're under fire. They're getting shot at. It's amazing. I love our dedication. It's just... It's what this show is all about.
Yeah, and I just have to apologize for Skype kicking me off and right smack in the middle of it. That was unfortunate, but can't help that. I want to welcome, we have both our guests on the line at the same time, so I want to welcome them both into the room. I want to welcome Cameron Tilbury. He is a publicist, and his website is Maple Star Music and Media. And I also want to welcome aboard Kurt Adams, who is running for the U.S. House of Representatives at Arizona District Number 5. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for both of you coming. My first, Annie, I know I'm going to get slapped in the face for this, but I'm going to post Kurt's website in the chat room. Immediately go take a look at a picture of his family. Kurt, oh my God, your wife and daughter are stunning. And I love the video on how they met. But ladies and gentlemen, for those who do not know what a oh, my God, she is beyond stunning. But the daughter has four brothers.
The key in life is to marry up.
Well, you did. And then your daughter has four brothers. How would you like to be the guy wanting to date her? Oh, man. What a beautiful family picture you have. And, Kurt, I am so excited to have you on. We need more Kurt Adams to run for office. True conservatives whose agenda to the Constitution doesn't waver.
That's right.
And we want to welcome also Cameron, who is also a publicist. And maybe Cameron can give Kurt a couple of hints on how to promote his candidacy a little bit more.
I think he's doing really well all by himself. I think you know what your core demographic is after, and you're doing it. You know, it's speaking to that core audience.
Thank you.
And Kurt, let me ask you a question. It appears... Here is Ted Cruz. It appears really, even in Republican primaries that are being challenged by conservatives, it seems like the true conservatives are just kicking booty. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. But first let me say thank you for dedicating the program to Mark Arizmendez from Gilbert. Gilbert's a great town, and I had the chance to listen in before you invited us into the room, and thank you so much for honoring these men and women for their sacrifice. That means a lot to all of us, and really that is what is at stake in this election cycle. Think about the thousands and thousands, even millions of people who have sacrificed for this country so that someone like me can have the freedom to start a small business, to hire people, to do something a little bit better than maybe a competitor, and to reap the rewards of my success. This free enterprise system, this capitalism system that is so unique to our country and so core to who we are, I think it's at risk. And I think the reason why you see people like Ted Cruz and others all over the country winning and beating better funded and better known candidates is because I think the people of this country are ready for true conservative leadership, individuals who walk the walk and don't just show up at election time and throw on a conservative label and hope that nobody notices.
Oh, that's true. That is absolutely true. Now, Cameron, you've worked with a couple of different campaigns, true?
Yes, ma'am. We worked with one of the campaigns down here in Tennessee. And it went, one of the candidate we were working with didn't make it in the primary, but we took some great ideas forward, and I hope in the future we'll be working with some others.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, I can think of about half a dozen people that I'd love to send your way that you can work on their campaigns. Matter of fact, we've got a state senator here, Clemente Pinckney, that we're trying to oust. And we've got a little-known Republican that's going to be challenging him on this 2012 election. So I'm trying to get the Republicans over here to get behind her and, let's bring that part of the county back into the red here.
Yeah, I think, this is, like Kirk says, this is, I think, a revolution all across the country. I actually have a bit of a wager with a friend of mine that it's going to be a Republican sweep. I think, you know, we need 270 electoral votes to win, but I'm picking 300. I think we'll get over 300. So I think it's people wanting a return to basics in this country. They've realized that just everything has got out of hand. Everything you see in the news is just things being stuffed down people's throats that they just don't want.
Oh, that's true. Now, Kirk, you're the person that you're challenging for the primary, which is in 2 weeks, is Matt Salmon. And he's got where he was for Obamacare, but now he's saying he wants to repeal it?
Well, he took the path that so many of our congressmen take. You know, he served for a period of time in Congress, left Congress, but never left Washington, leveraged his public service into a lucrative lobbying career. And one of the things that he lobbied for was actually for the passage of Obamacare. You'll recall that the president, President Obama, made a deal with the pharmaceutical industry. In exchange for their support of the bill, they were able to carve out essentially revenues for their companies in perpetuity. And Matt Salmon was a lobbyist for two of these pharmaceutical companies in behalf of Obamacare. Now that the situation has changed and he seeks to go back to Congress after 18 years in Washington, he knows that in this district, a very conservative district, voters don't look kindly upon Obamacare. In fact, they're very much opposed to it. And so now he's taken a different position. It's this sort of, though, this is, I think, emblematic of the opportunism that we see so often from the governing elite in Washington. If it suits their purposes, they're for it. Well, I think it's time to change that. We need an entirely new generation of leaders, people who are more interested in public service as opposed to personal enrichment and personal gain.
You know, no. one thing I really like about you, Kurt, if you read his website, Kurt outright comments how disappointed he is in the Republicans for not stopping Janet Napolitano with other things. And, I mean, true conservatism, they belong to a party, whether it's Democrat or Republican. But they're not afraid. You know, we fight with our brothers and sisters, but they're not afraid to stand up for it. And I agree, Kurt, as a conservative, and I know Annie is too. Annie actually started her own Tea Party in Beaufort, South Carolina. But the bottom line is, I mean, even these rhinos, as you mentioned, here's your competitor. I mean, we need to get rid of these people, period. I mean, they are just destroying this country. Go ahead, Annie. I'm sorry I cut you off. I didn't mean to.
Well, no. What I was going to say is that the Republican Party during the mid part of the last decade became infected with the same disease that the Democrats have had for a long time, which is the only focus that they had was getting reelected. We saw this in Arizona even when Janet Napolitano, after her reign here in Arizona for 6 years before she mercifully left in 2008, spending increased dramatically. And it increased Republicans controlling the legislature. I was a freshman member of the state house at the time, and I organized like-minded conservatives to vote against my own Republican leadership 2 separate years. So we didn't have enough votes because there were enough Republicans and our leadership that went along with Governor Napolitano. And so I challenged my own speaker as a freshman, ran against him for the speakership, and I won. I was 35 years old, and I beat a gentleman almost twice my age and had been one of the longest-serving speakers in the state house history. And the reason why I point that out is, Mike, you're exactly right. It's not as much about the party affiliation, but what is the right thing to do. And we need people who are willing, when it's needed, to challenge party leadership and put themselves on the line and make those tough choices and decisions.
No,
I agree, totally. That's right on the money. And, you know, down here in Tennessee, we've got a rhino that just wasn't sufficient challenge for it. And we wish we'd get a true conservative in.
Now, Cameron, being in Tennessee, I have a friend of mine that lived out in that area and came back recently from visiting, and they were surprised about how many Democrats are in that area where you would think you're part of the Bible Belt, you've got all the farm agricultural out there. You would think you'd find a more conservative environment there, but that's not the case, is it?
Well, where we are, just in Nashville, I think it's relatively conservative. But I think, you know, you run into the traditional Southern Democrat party line. That's been what I see anyway, that people have a lot of conservative concepts and a lot of conservative beliefs, but I always vote Democrat. That just seems a peculiarity of the area. But I think Tennessee is going to be a pretty good lock with, staying a red state.
Yeah, well, that's something I found, especially in the South here in South Carolina. You know, you talk to people and they have conservative values, but when they go to the polls, they're pulling the lever for Democrats. And I just didn't understand that until you learned the mentality of the South that, you know, in order to do anything, you had to be part of the Democratic machine, no matter what you personally thought. It's changing, though. And I think the Tea Party has a lot to do with turning that away.
Also, another thing, Kurt, if comment on Kurt, is that he has a video I just posted. Kurt, and I didn't mean to cut you off. I'll jump on you. Guess what, everyone? Union workers are supporting Kurt Adams. Yes, hello, workers themselves of labor who work with their hands. You got to see, I'm posting these videos of all dreams, and it's amazing, Kurt. You basically could have been king of Arizona for as long as you wanted, yet you're taking this risk, leaving the state house and running for Congress. I admire you for that, and I love how organized labor people are doing videos for you. That is unbelievable. Even people are coming forward saying, if Kurt didn't intervene and rearrange the financial situation, my pension was at risk. I mean, everyone likes to think that the Democrats are the only one who helped organize labor, which is so false. But go ahead, Kurt. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mike, you know, there's a big difference between union leaders and their rank-and-file members. You know, the union leaders who are politicians in their own right and have their own empire to protect certainly are opposed to me in this campaign. But many of the rank-and-file firefighters and police officers, for example, whose pensions we were able to save because we reformed the public pension system, are appreciative, especially those like the one in the video that are younger. I mean, look, we have a responsibility as elected officials to ensure that we can keep the promises that we have made. And when we have public pensions across the country, frankly, that are underfunded and over-promising what they can deliver, then we need people willing to step up, regardless of the political risk, to tackle this. And that's what we did here in Arizona. They did it in Wisconsin, and the voters have done it in California in cities like San Diego and San Jose. So you're starting to see people really pay attention to these kinds of issues, because if we don't, my goodness, what we will have to pay in the future in taxes will be more than any of us would care to imagine.
You're right on there, Kirk. I think, you know, you point to Wisconsin, and that's a great example of, the left-wing media machine trying to fuel something that people just weren't going to have anymore. Pensions were out of hand, unions were out of hand, and everyday people stood up and said, we've had enough.
Well, that's what we need, everyday people to stand up. And thankfully, we are.
Well,
it's
Kurt,
taken a while.
That leads to another question, Kirk. I mean, you were a speaker. I mean, you were in a way a kind of a ruler in your own individual house there. Why take a risk and run for Congress?
Well, two simple reasons. The first is, as Speaker of the House, we had one of the worst deficits in the country. We cut spending by almost 30%. To balance our budget, and now we have a surplus. Compare that to California folks, who had nearly an identical deficit as a percentage of revenues, and they took a Democratic approach instead of a conservative approach, and they still have billions of dollars of deficit. But in that process of balancing the budget, it became so apparent to me that the federal government had usurped so much governing authority from the states that it prohibited or inhibited our ability to manage and govern our own affairs. We've come so far afield from the federal system of government that we need people not only pushing back from the state level, we need people pushing that power from Washington back to the states. That was one reason. The second reason I decided to resign the speakership to run for Congress was I have five kids. You've seen those kids, Mike. You see what beautiful kids those are. You know what? Here's a simple fact. If we don't change course, I can guarantee you that my five kids will not have the same opportunity for success and prosperity that I've had, because the course we are headed will diminish their freedoms, diminish their prosperity, and diminish their opportunity. And so long as any of us, whether we're running for office or not, or doing things like this radio show, or just educating the public, so long as any of us have any type of talent, ability, capacity, whatever it is to stop that, we should. That's what I'm
This is right on point. I mean, this will be the first generation. For generations, the American dream has always been leave your kids a little better off than you were. And this is going to be the first generation where, should the current policies continue, the kids are going to be left worse off than we are.
You're right. In fact, the American people sense this. I hear this all the time. We run a very grassroots campaign. We're in people's living rooms two or three times a night, on the phone with voters. I hear this all the time. And in fact, Gallup released a poll a few weeks ago. Only 14% of Americans believe the next generation will be better off than this generation. That is an unbelievable figure, and it speaks to the lack of confidence that we as a people have in this government and the direction that it's taking us.
And you would think that it would just make sense that if you're looking at those kind of statistics where only 14% of the population believe they're better off, you would think that logically that would roll over to votes at election time. And I think the confusing thing for all of us is people see this but just can't vote for it. And I just don't get it.
I think in a lot of ways you're seeing a voter revolution. Revolutions take a long time. People will get stepped on, they'll get kicked, they'll get pushed, they'll even get punched. And you know what? The American people are very believers in themselves. But I mean, you kick them one too many times, and here's the first step. I think the first step is going to the polls, electing Kirk Adams, and you're seeing in California, you are seeing many congressional victories are veterans of the Marines that served in Afghanistan. They colluded together. They, formed their own little coalition. They won all the primaries. And in many, many ways, I think we're taking a first step of a peaceful type revolution and changing things. Because realistically, it's up to us. We can depend on Kirk Adams all we want in Arizona or whoever in California. But ultimately, it is a movement of we the people that change things. And I didn't mean to interrupt, Kirk.
You're absolutely right. Alan West was on Fox the other night, and he was saying that this is really a he was commenting on a Romney Ryan ticket, and he said this is actually for the first time now, none of the presidential and vice presidential candidates have served. And he said now that a lot of personnel are coming back from Iraq, Afghanistan, and other places we've been in action, they're starting to convert from their uniform into a suit and go into public office again. And I think this is a great movement because I think it's getting out of touch with that's got us into a lot of trouble.
I agree with that. And I want to go back to the earlier comment that you made, Cameron, about the frustration of how people feel, but it's not showing up at the ballot box all the time. I think this is an education issue of the electorate. And I can't think of any movement in the last 50 years that has had more impact on people's knowledge of the issues and the politics than the Tea Party movement. And imagine where we would be today in this election cycle without the Tea Party movement that came in a reaction to the spending, the stimulus, and Obamacare. we've come so far, and I have seen this in my short time being involved in politics. From the very beginning, where it seemed like everybody was apathetic, they weren't that interested in politics, and frankly, perhaps we were all feeling a little bit fat and happy, to today, where people understand that we're headed towards a crisis, and in fact, they're probably in it now, and they are worried about the direction of their country. They're worried about the future for their kids and grandkids, and they're showing up at the Tea Party meetings all over the country. They're getting engaged and involved. It takes time. It's not going to happen overnight, but I think we're well on our way.
You know, you said something interesting, though, because the Tea Party, being one of the co-founders and webmaster for our Tea Party, the first 2 years we were out there, protesting, we were out there doing rallies, we were out there having speakers and music or whatever, but everyone thought that we were dead. We just sat back a little bit. We wanted to see what was happening with the playing field. But now that we've got Romney Ryan ticket, you have to see the emails that are being blasted between members and other organizations. This is that quiet movement that got Ted Cruz his nomination. And I think that we've actually turned the tables on the progressives. We've used their own tactics against them. And it's like,
I think you're right. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's like we had. Our previous guest was Jeff Hedgepeth, who's known as the Alinsky Defeater. He's got a book out saying Rules for Radicals Defeated, which shows, you know, conservatives and Republicans how to turn the rules for radicals against them and never losing your moral compass. And that's the difference between us and them.
I think, you know, this Romney Ryan ticket, I've been telling friends, I haven't been this stoked about a presidential ticket since Reagan Bush. I'm really excited about this. Romney picked Ryan, and it was such an incredibly bold choice, and I think it's really mobilized the conservative base of the Republican Party.
Yeah,
and more even so than that, I think this truly represents a generational choice. This will be the first choice election since probably Reagan and Carter, where there is a clear, distinct difference and direction that the two nominees and that the two tickets will take this country. I mean, what Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney are offering is a way forward out of the debt and out of economic stagnation. What the president and his vice president will continue to offer is fear. And they'll continue to use the same old playbook that the liberals and progressives have always used to try to scare people. And that difference, that generational choice that we see, I think will be defining for our country. It also makes the stakes much higher for all of us. We have to win this election. Romney and Ryan must win. If they don't, and if the president manages to win this election, then I fear that he will perceive that as a mandate to accelerate our lurch towards European-style social welfare states.
Oh, you're right on the money there. And I lived in England for almost 10 years and have seen what up front what that European socialism is like. And I love the country, but when you saw, you could just look across the channel and see what was going on. And it's scary because the same things that I've seen there are coming into play here. When the Labour Party was in charge in the UK, they were manipulating the voter list by opening up widespread immigration. And the same thing is happening here. And I've got one of the bands that I work for, two of the guys in the band are from Cuba, and they've seen there what could happen here. And you've never met more conservative guys than these two.
No, that's true. But I'm going to ask you, Cameron, have you noticed a change in the tenure of Romney's speeches and everything since he chose Ryan? Before, it was sort of like, everything was a little lackluster. It was kind of pat. But now he's out there. He's energized. And it's a different Romney you're seeing out there.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's great. Now, I have some ideas on that. I think he may have been waiting I'd like to think he was waiting until he made his vice presidential pick, because then they've got, and if I can turn it back to what I do, they've got a brand now. And there's no mixing up what Romney's message was prior with what's going on now. And the passion that he has now, I think Ryan has revitalized the campaign. And I think this is just a lead up. Watch what happens at the RNC. I think that's going to be huge. I think that's when you're going to see the Romney-Ryan brand really get angry. They're going to start going aggressively after Obama and the Democrats. I think this is just going to be incredible, and we should have some really great speakers at that that can really mobilize the base.
I don't know if anyone has heard, but Joe Biden this morning gave a speech in front of predominantly black people where he said they want to put you back in chains. Can you imagine if Kurt Adams right now on this show said that, made that speech? Go ahead.
The double standard, the liberal hypocrisy that just goes on. And once again, the White House doesn't apologize or step away from those comments. And I think people, again, I was saying to my wife just recently, because there's always a lot of comparisons drawn between the current occupants of the White House and the Nixon administration, where there was paranoia and corruption. And I say that, well, yeah, the difference is that the Nixon administration was pretty smart. And I don't think that this current administration is that smart. They're just going to keep doing these gaffes where they, like with the cancer TV ad, and they blatantly lie by saying, no, we don't know anything about that. You'll have to talk to them. And people know that they're lying. They're seeing through this stuff. And one of the other parallels that I've drawn, too, is the famous Monty Python parrot sketch, where the guy goes into the shop and he says, I'd like to register a complaint about this parrot that I bought half an hour ago. It's dead. And the guy in the shop says, well, no, it's not. And that's essentially what we have, is the Monty Python dead parrot sketch going on in the White House. We show them the truth, and they lie and say, no, it's not. Look here. And the liberal media just fall right into line and follow that.
But, Cameron, don't you think that the White House, from their perspective, may have no other option? They can't run on the record. They can't. They don't have a substantive vision for the country that the American people will accept. So instead, we're going to essentially accuse Mitt Romney of murdering a woman by giving her cancer, not taking care of her. We're going to say he doesn't pay any taxes. You know, we're going to say that Paul Ryan wants to push old ladies off my cliffs, and we're just going to provide fear, and then more fear, and then more fear, because the last thing he wants to do is campaign on his unpopular health care bill or an economy that's worse than it was when he inherited it. I mean, you know, he has no record upon which to campaign upon.
And I think
this is going to get a whole lot worse before it gets better.
Oh, this is going to be, I mean, we've seen nothing so far as dirty politics. They are just going to go just out of their way. And if you read things, and you'll know, Kurt, that this is the Chicago way. This is how they do it. And to go back to that famous Al Capone movie when Sean Connery said, the real Chicago way is they put one of yours in the hospital, you put one of theirs in a morgue. That's the attitude that we have to take with this, is they want to get dirty, we go for everything and get worse and really put them down, because they are going to stop at nothing. And, you know, when we were talking about the tone of Romney's campaign, and everybody's looking at it and saying, you're letting them get away with this stuff, and you're letting them just keep spewing it. And now it's changed, because they're afraid of that, as you say, the economic record. They can't stand on that. But by having Ryan on the ticket, it's very much that point. That is the laser beam. That is the point. It is the economy, stupid. And we have to be dirty about it, but we have to be right on point and keep driving home that economy. And people will get it.
there's another important element to this that I think we all need to promote and understand. When we talk about the economy and the challenges that we face, I think we have to go beyond just the numbers and go to the moral imperative of why free enterprise is superior to a government command and control economy. Why free enterprise is more true to our tradition as a country. Why free enterprise helps people achieve their greatest potential as opposed to the false security offered by a government command and control economy. We as conservatives of every stripe, Republican or Democrat, need to speak this to people. We need to teach this to people that they understand the moral imperatives of free enterprise over government command and control.
You know, one of the things I noticed is that they seem to think we're stupid. They have to do government-mandated health care because we're too stupid to take care of ourselves. We have Social Security because we're too stupid to save money for ourselves. And now there's an editorial in the New York Times recently, Teresa Giarducci, and people learn this name, Teresa Giarducci. She has a plan that she's pushing around Washington. It's a second form of Social Security. She's saying you're too stupid to open up your own 401k or IRA, so the government is going to have you go to one of these money managers, and they're going to tell you which ones to go to, so you can be forced and mandated to save your money for your old age because you're too stupid to do it.
Yeah,
and I think
that's scary.
I think what the Mitt Romney message is, yes, I built that. We have to turn around and also add to that, and no, I'm not stupid. I can handle my own life. Get out of my bedroom. Get out of my house. Leave me alone.
Oh, exactly. The government intrusion is just beyond. It already is, and it's just going to get worse if the current incumbent is reelected.
Yeah, we've got a caller in on the line. Let me bring this person in. Area code 770, you're on the air live with Southern Sense. Who am I speaking to?
Oh, yeah, it's me, C. Robert Jones.
Southern. How are you doing?
Dr. Jones.
Great show. Oh, yeah, and your sidekick. Your sidekick, Cool Mike. I keep forgetting.
Yeah.
You overshadow him so much.
Oh, jeez. Here we go. Cameron and Kurt, this is C. Robert Jones, a retired Marine who was actually, his first act of combat was the invasion of Grenada. A very good friend of ours. And Doc Jones, you get on Kurt's website. You got a lot of money. You sent him $100 now.
Oh, okay. Well, great. I love it. Love it. Hey, you know what? I'm glad you guys are having this show and having this topic, and the guests that are on are fabulous. But you know what? As a point of you know what you guys are talking about in terms of Republicans going to you know put one of them in the hospital, put one of yours in the morgue. The Republican Party, you know, after the days of Richard Nixon, have become, you know, very passive in their election campaigning and getting down dirty and getting in the mud. Nixon was really good at it, and George Bush won. You know, he had Lee Atwater, and I think what we really need now, the late great Lee Atwater, you know, we don't have those kinds of guys anymore.
Yeah.
Of course, there's Karl Rove, but, you know, he's no Lee Atwater in terms of, you know, getting the message out there down and dirty. Go ahead.
No, I agree with you. We need somebody, and I don't think – I mean, just the other day when the cancer addict came out and one of Romney's
I think we just lost someone here.
But
there we go.
When the campaign ad came out and it was the cancer ad, and one of Romney's campaign directors got on and she couldn't really say anything about it. And there's no fight to that. We need to fight. And you're right. Lee Atwater was terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we don't have that anymore. The Republican Party is so afraid of alienating, you know, even the most minute voting bloc that, you know, we're the white bread guys. You know, we fight fair, we fight clean, you know, or we don't fight at all. And it doesn't win elections, you know, for us that way. We need to be able to fight Obama with using Obama's tactics. And I'm not suggesting directly Romney get his hands dirty directly, but there are certain surrogates like a Lee Atwater. I'm sure there's some out there. There's some young up and coming, you know, Lee Atwater type of guy who will go out and do the things necessary to get down and dirty and win the fight. So far, the chairman of the Republican Party, he's been doing all the, you know, the tough talking.
Right.
And Hang on a second, everyone. I got to interrupt. Kurt, I know we only have you for a few minutes. Why don't you give a closing statement, and thank you for joining us. We're all behind you. But go ahead. Why don't you give a closing statement before you got to go?
Well, thank you for the time. I appreciate the great conversation. It's great to talk to people all over the country who have the same concerns that we do here in Arizona. You know, here in Arizona, we've faced some tough times in the last few years. We balanced a record deficit. We did everything we could to secure our border and to protect our citizens. We challenged Obamacare from the very, very beginning. We challenged card check here in Arizona when the president was trying to get that done. I firmly believe it's time for that type of perseverance and leadership, an entirely new generation of leaders for Washington is what is needed, because the current generation, whether they've been the Republicans or the Democrats, have not only created these problems, they've made it worse. That's why I'm running for Congress. You can find out more about me, KirkAdams2012.com, or follow me on Twitter, Kirk Adams, or on Facebook, Kirk Adams. I would love to have your help and support. And we're the last 2 weeks in this race. I am running against someone who has been in Washington for 18 years. It's time that he comes home permanently. I'd love to have your help and support. Thanks so much, everybody.
Kirk, that was great.
Gentlemen,
best of luck to you.
Thank you. Kirk Adams. And Kirk, you make sure you relay that message to your queen there and what I said. Boy, oh boy.
I will.
That's what a first lady should look like, in my opinion.
And each one of my boys will have a shotgun to protect their sisters. So.
Thank you, ladies
Thank
and gentlemen.
You all.
Kirk Adams, a true conservative Republican. And speaking of that, I'm going to throw this show for a loop right now. We got Doc Jones on the line. We got Annie. When are you two going to get in the race and do something? I mean, you guys talk on Blog Talk. When are we going to see a move here, you guys?
I told my mom.
Right. With my arrest record,
I told my mom a long time ago, I'll clean sewers before I become a politician.
Yeah. You know what? I was thinking of getting involved in the political area. Both me and a good friend of mine, Stephen Eddie Ray, who's a retired Marine colonel, a war hero. He and I were in the same class together at OCS back in the early 80s. And, you know, Colonel Ray has been approached many times, and he's in Annie's area right now in South Carolina. And he's been approached so many times, and I thought I'd get involved with him and, you know, sort of work with his campaign if he ever does run for office, even though I suspect he'll be running as a Democrat or an independent. He does have a lot of conservative views, but I thought maybe I'd get my feet wet by working, you know, with his campaign once he's drafted, and then see how his thing goes, and then try something myself a little bit later on.
I think it'd be great. You know, this is the problem that politicians have earned such a bad name, and all to their credit, you know, over the past several years. But I think the Tea Party movement is, again, going back to that basis. If you strip away the politics out of it, the Tea Party is going back to the basis of public service. And you're there to do good. You're there to serve your constituents and not make a career out of being a politician.
No, that's very true. And it's something I keep on saying, and something I've been promoting, that, you know, our state representatives, you know, that we send up into the Congress, the House, the U.S. House, should not be paid by the federal government. It should be paid by the state government. If I'm electing you from South Carolina, then it should be the South Carolina legislature that determines your paycheck and writes that check, not the federal government. Your benefits
Absolutely.
Should be provided by the state. So now you're beholden to the state and not the federal system.
I also think it's important that we get a politician, a new generational politician, and we pass a law. This makes elections more fair. At certain levels, this is what you can spend, period. And you can't have, if I were running, I can't have Doc Jones running commercials to support me because I've exceeded $10,000 at like a state house level. Congress is obviously different, but hold it to that price, period, to where a billionaire can run, but he can spend no more than Annie, Doc Jones, Cameron, or myself. That way money is taken out of the equation. You know, there's a cute commercial I saw the other day. It was a cartoon, and it had a picture of Barack Obama, and he's giving away things in his booth. It's like at a circus or a carnival or something. He's giving away all these great prizes, and here, it's free, it's free, it's free. And then there's Romney standing there alone, and behind him is the board and how much things cost. I mean, he's got nobody there, but they're all surrounded around Obama's booth. And that's a perfect example of this illusion that something is free. I mean, do these people give it to government for free? Do they give it to us for free? That's a perfect example is that nothing is free. And when when the person takes it for free, they don't even realize in many, many ways you're giving up your freedom for that free. And it's still not free. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm originally from Canada. And then I moved to the UK. So I come from two countries where people are used to getting free stuff. And in Canada, the healthcare system, it's convenient that if you're sick and have to go to the hospital or go to the doctor, you don't have to pay anything up front, but you're getting it on the back end. Prices in Canada are much higher than they are down here. And in the UK, the NHS, what used to be a leader in healthcare is crumbling. And it's, you know, nothing against the doctors and nurses there, because I needed that healthcare system at a certain point. The doctors and nurses are fantastic, and trying to struggle against a system that's crumbling, and they don't know what to do with it. I would much rather the system be like it is here, where you are paying for what you get. And the healthcare system is determined by the free market. And if you can get a better price someplace else, then you get a better price someplace else, just like any other product.
No, that's very true. And matter of fact, I've just almost done reading a book called Anthem Against Obama. It's a doctor that I'm going to have on later on in the next couple of weeks. He wrote it based upon Ayn Rand's anthem that she wrote back in 1936. And if you start looking at what's happening to our society and what he's writing about, it's going to happen in the future. It's all about the healthcare. It's all about the whole system that progressives want you so dependent upon the government. Government can't exist unless we allow it to exist. And that's something that we have to realize. It's going to exist only because we allow it. And we've got to...
Go ahead, Annie. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was just going to say we got to start shutting down some of these programs and bring it back to the state and local level.
I think I was going to make a statement about Paul Ryan. I think, although I disagree with him on many of the, as far as the Patriot Act, et cetera, what scares Democrats on this is something that Kurt mentioned. Paul Ryan is a rank-and-file union man. He doesn't support the fat cats, but the people, the rank-and-file members, love this guy. He has done an awful lot for them to become individual entrepreneurs in Wisconsin. He has supported the union and the things they've done, the workers. And this scares the Democrats because you know what? Mother and father can preach all they want about what's right and wrong. If the kids don't listen to you, it ain't happening. And I think the Democrats are very fearful that you're going to see labor supporters support this ticket as they did Ronald Reagan, because they knew Ronald Reagan meant free enterprise, which means better for the worker.
Exactly.
I'm telling you, I think they're wetting themselves. They're so scared right now. This was the worst pick possible for the Democrats next to me.
I think they were absolutely paranoid about this happening. You know, I think they thought that Romney was going to pick somebody like Tim Pawlenty, who's very good, but really not someone who can mobilize a base. And I think the Democrats got their worst nightmare because it's taking the fight to them. And as you mentioned earlier, this this fight now is about nothing but the economy. And so the misdirection and the lies from them are going to become huge. It was beautiful. I don't know if you saw it on the internet today, where John Sununu was smacking down Soledad O'Brien because she was just quoting the White House briefing room's propaganda line about Social Security and Medicare. And he just told her, he said, look, if you're going to do this, put an Obama bumper sticker on your forehead so people know who you're standing for, because this is absolutely ridiculous. But some of these surrogates are absolutely stepping in and mobilizing this base like Ryan.
You know, I want to ask Doc Jones a question. We still have you with us, Doc?
Doc Jones?
Yeah, I'm here. I put my phone
on. Doc, what do you? I got a question for you since you're black. I mean, when Joe Biden.
What are you calling? What do you mean, you people?
Yeah, exactly. When Joe Biden makes a comment to predominantly a bunch of black people that Romney, he wants to put you all back in chains. I mean, how do you? I mean, I just interpret it as what an a-hole. I mean, but how would you interpret that? I mean, not only as a black person, but you've served this country for 30 years. You're a father, a grandfather. I mean,
Mike, I heard that earlier. I heard that he said that on your show. I hadn't heard it before then, but immediately I thought that, you know, he's standing in an audience full of black people. You know, it's not as if there aren't any really intelligent black people sitting in that audience who realize that what he's saying is rhetoric and find it to be deeply condescending and patronizing. And they might clap for him or give him a yoo-hoo or whatever, but they understand this is a bunch of crap. It could never happen. It's not, that he's basically just running his mouth. That's what he does. And so what he said is probably going to be fodder for conservative news. Hannity's most likely going to talk about it later on tonight. Of course, I'll be watching. But that's it. Black people are not feeling that, the whole thing. And you know, if I were sitting in the audience, I would find what he's saying to be, you know, condescending. He's attempting to dumb down, you know, to speak down to the audience. You know, and folks understand that. I don't care if you're conservative or liberal. When that kind of talk is you know, is put out there, when he says, you know, stuff like that, when any politician says anything like that, it's offensive. It's offensive, and I believe that the liberals who were most likely sitting in that audience found it to be so themselves.
But the whole Democrat policy is condescending towards other races. You know, the idea of inner cities are just pumping money after money after money into those, and has it helped? Detroit's just such a success story. You know, there are major problems, but that's how the Democrats keep their base, is by keeping people down. And I don't understand why people don't get that.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that, you know, in talking to a lot of, because I am black, you know, talking to a lot of black folks, they understand, you know, that a lot of what's being said by the Democrat Party and by liberals in general is just a lot of crap. But, you know, it's an entitlement situation. Blacks believe, a lot of black folks believe that they're owed something because of the injustices, the perceived injustices and the real ones, that they're owed something. I'm hearing all the time about reparations, about how this ethnic group got at reparations and that ethnic group got reparations. And, of course, the whole thing with the internment during World War II, they got reparations. There's ours. They want theirs. And they believe that they're entitled to what they're getting as a result of what occurred 200-300 years ago, even back in the 60s, I suppose. But it's a mentality that's just not right. You know, it's just not
exactly. And when you take into consideration that the Republican Party was the party of freedom, that's the party that ended slavery.
But the thing is, you know, the Republicans aren't offering any free stuff.
No.
You know, when you say to people, You know, it's all yours. Go out and get it. You know, find a way to go out and get it. Live your dream. You know, make your own way in life. Don't continue to harp on what's happened in the past. Live for your future and your family's future, as opposed to the Democrats saying, oh, you were so mistreated all those years, or your ancestors, your great-great-grandfather, all these folks were so mistreated. You deserve this. I'm going to give it to you. All you have to do is vote for me, and it's all yours. I mean, a lot of folks are going to love that message.
You're right. And that's now transcending the races and becoming basically the Obama campaign message is, here's free stuff. You deserve it. But
doesn't that also now turn around and take away their freedom or their will to better themselves and lives? Instead, they want the American Idol dream, where all of a sudden you go up there on stage and 5 minutes later you're a star.
Well, that's the symptom of that's a problem with society in general. Nobody wants, you know, when we were kids and learning to play guitar, we wanted to learn to play guitar so we could pick up girls, and then you could make a few bucks on the side. And if you got to be a star, that was so far down the road you didn't even think of it. But people aren't like that now. They learn to play guitar so they can be a star. And even the learning guitar step is a pain to them. They just want to be a star. What for? Well, just to be famous. And that's just a symptom of society. With shows like, you know, American Idol and things like that, it's people can be very good singers, but they're not very good artists.
All right, we got another caller in on the line. Let me bring this person aboard. Area code 901, you're on the air live with Southern Sense. Who am I speaking to?
It's Perry Steele. What's going on?
Hi, Perry.
Hey, Perry Steele.
What's up, man?
We got one big happy family back here on BTR.
Yeah, one big happy family. I heard that. I've been sitting around and looking at Romney and looking at Barack Obama. And to tell you the truth, I wouldn't vote for either one of them. I really would. Because, this is just my personal opinion, though, but you got to look at this as a global economy that we're in. And this hypnotic spell they have on people telling me we're going to bring back jobs. We've already outsourced most of the jobs that we're talking about bringing back. And America's not compatible on a world stage, because you can pay people so little to create, the products that we use.
You're absolutely right.
I don't think it's going to be no better.
Absolutely right with that, because the whole argument that was going around a little while ago about, Romney outsourcing this, and the whole argument is disingenuous, because just by the very nature of free trade, you're outsourcing. You're outsourcing the low-paying jobs to another country so they can do that. And so in the global economy, you're right. This is a problem. But I think America has to start taking things back not becoming as reliant on a global economy. Now, it's a very fine line, because you get into the situation of protectionism,
right?
Which just doesn't work for anyone. But I think we have to be, for example, we have to be energy independent. We have to be able to drill, get coal, offshore drilling, because the Russians are drilling off our shores down south. We have to be able to get that, and we have to have some of the manufacturing jobs back here as well.
But we
sold down our – what Perry said is not only spot on, but back when Clinton was president, we surrendered our – with the WTO, the World Trade Organization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We basically put unelected officials in charge of our trade. So let's say, for example, let's take Perry's idea and throw it right out the window, okay? That's where it says, of the business manufacturing we have left, okay, are these people going to make 25 cents an hour like they are in China? Can we live off that? I mean, the bottom line.
No, we can't.
That's damn right we can't. And you know what? It's great to have Romney. It's great to have Obama. It's great to have person A and person B. But you know what? If this country is going to revise, if this country is going to make a comeback, it's because myself, Doc Jones, Annie, Perry Steele, all these other people, it's we the people that are taking it back.
That's
if we're looking to Washington to save us, you know, our ship is half sunk. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt whoever I interrupted.
It goes back to what Ronald Reagan said, that Washington isn't the solution, it's the problem.
Yeah,
and people have to realize that and have that creative spirit. We are guaranteed the pursuit of happiness, not happiness. And people have to be willing to go back and work for that and take this country back with their own two hands. And that's the only way it's going to be done.
Well, you see, one of the problems is that we're in a plutocracy. You know, plutocracy. You know, you got to be a millionaire to be a senator. And I think one of you gentlemen was talking about running for office. Sir, if you ain't got no real money, you ain't got a chance. You got to have some
There are these grassroots organizations that are coming up, and some of the politicians, the new generation, like Ted Cruz, you know, that has come from grassroots, and they've been able to fight against the big money. And I think people are realizing that. But you're right.
But how you take them out of that mindset that you got to be a Democrat or a Republican? And when all of them complicit, once they get to Washington, the whole story changes. Oh, they make a good campaign speech. They make a good campaign stump. But once they get up there, and I don't know, it looks like they go through some kind of indoctrination. Next thing you know, boom, they rank and file with the rest of them.
Well, how many people have gone to Washington saying, gone to being president, saying, I'm going to change business as usual and do things differently? And it's just such a huge machine that they can't do it.
They can't do it.
But I think you're seeing now, as we've been discussing through the whole show, you're seeing now that people are forming these grassroots organizations. I think the Tea Party is the best thing to happen to politics because it's stripping away.
I think they got sold out. Mike and I did a show about the Tea Party, how they did this one lady. Mike, remember?
Yeah, that was Annie. That was I forgot her name, but yeah.
She was on Zink Urich's show, I think, on MSNBC. And if Tea Party International came in,
Laura Boatwright. I'm sorry, Perry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Laura Boatwright was her name. But I mean,
yeah, Laura Boatwright.
What we're talking about is not the National Tea Party. We're talking like Annie's group, Kirk Adams. Kirk Adams has no outsiders. He has no outsiders involved. Listen to this, and Kirk's campaign has been able to raise to run against this Washington guy who's getting huge money from the prescription, them companies, the dope company, $215,000, all from residents of his district, and he will not accept outside money. And his local Tea Party is helping him. But anytime it doesn't matter if it's Tea Party, Republican. Once you get federalized, you're fighting a machine, an indoctrination, a brainwashing of you're one of us now. And, you know, that's why I say we have to elect the veteran soldiers, because their oath of office, their life, is sworn to the Constitution. And with most of these people, you cannot brainwash them. They will – I mean, they are just
– they're indispensable. You know, because like I said, you know, here it is now in Afghanistan, you got – Afghan police and Afghan soldiers shooting American soldiers. You know, they indispensable. They don't care about those people, man, that we send to war. And then, like I said, you know, you send them to war, but when are they going to win? When the last time we won? You can't say we won in Iraq. We didn't win nothing in Iraq. Iraq is just as in a battle of disarray as it was when Saddam was there. We every time America preaches democracy and humanitarian aid to other countries, we leave them in a worse mess than they would. We shouldn't have been in there.
Look
at what we're doing.
And let me get in here for a minute. Harry, there's winning militarily, and then there's winning politically. The last time we won was pretty much a stalemate in Korea, and we did not leave South Korea worse than we found it. We didn't leave Kuwait worse than we found it. We did very well in militarily with Iraq. We won.
We didn't have a real fight in Kuwait.
We defended,
South Korea is the only one I can agree with you on. But you know, like I said, it's still no armistice been signed. I mean, you know, it's not the end of the hostilities, because North Korea is still attacking South Korea every chance they get. They attacked them a couple of years ago.
North Korea, and as I said, Gary, North Korea and South Korea are in a stalemate, and we did not leave the country worse off than
we didn't win either.
We liberated South Korea. There is a stalemate. That's the end of that story. The reason why the military, you say, don't win is because the politicians are the ones who control what the military does and how far we can go. And there's a culture that exists after Korea or after World War II that suggests that we don't go for all-out victory anymore because there are too many political considerations. The only reason why we don't achieve total victory after World War II is due to political ramifications, not the military itself.
The criminal,
exactly.
It's called the criminal military justice complex. Excuse me, a criminal military industrial complex. See, we fight wars to make other people rich. That's all we do. We don't go over there to fight.
World War II,
I think we lost that caller. No, Annie, go ahead, Annie. I think we lost that caller, Annie. But anyway, go ahead.
In World War II, there was a clear-cut mission, there was a clear-cut win, and as soon as we won, what was the first thing we did? Nation building. We went back and built those countries back up again.
The Marshall Plan.
And exactly. And what happens now, because the military leadership has become so politicized, and we don't have clear-cut definitions, we don't have clear-cut goals, we have our guys over there laying their lives on the line every day for something they don't know what they're fighting for. They don't know who they're fighting for, and they don't know who to trust.
Right.
And that's scary. That's really scary. And I think militarily, I mean, foreign policy, we have to have clear-cut definitions when we go into some place. And we have to be able to do nation building again where it's possible.
I think we come out better when we sit back and wait for a provocation rather than creating one, a false flag. Because, you know, like I said, this weapons of mass destruction, that didn't fly. You know, that didn't fly. Now I'm really concerned about this confrontation with China and the South China Seas. I mean, we're battle weary. We've gone on 11 years fighting at least 5 or 6 different folks. Then we're in Pakistan, too. You know, we battle weary. Now we're going to send the fleet. We're going to send our fleets over here in the South China Seas and fight China. China got plenty of money, plenty of people. That's a real fight. We've been fighting folks that really can't retaliate against us, you know, to the magnitude of a Navy or Air Force or a Marine, you know, structured military response. We don't fight people like that. But we fight China, then it's going to bring it on. That's why I'm concerned about Mitt Romney when he said he's going to make the American military second to none. It takes money.
Perry, we've got to close down now because we're down to our last 5 minutes here. All right. You want to make a
closing
statement? No, closing statement, Perry. Start off with Perry Steele. Who's Perry, when is your show on? Why don't you tell everyone when your show's on?
Oh, I'll come on, you know, like on Blog Talk Radio between 9 or 10 sometimes, you know. And like I said, you know, we've been, talking about, you know, this issue with China and how President Barack Obama is leading this nation to destruction. And we and Mitt Romney, like I said, he said we're going to have a military second to none. Like I said, we've got $1 trillion unaccounted for that. We can't even track down where the money being spent. So that's what mainly what I'll talk about. But I appreciate you letting me say that, though.
Yeah. Check Donald Rumsfeld's overseas account. I think we'll find that cash. Thank you, Perry. Dr. Jones, C. Robert Jones, is on Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. It's at 9 p.m. Tonight's show is going to be a good one. It's Who is John Galt? We've got some more Galt stuff going on, some more corporations and citizens leaving the United States for greener pastures and lower taxes in record numbers here in the United States, and that's what tonight's show is going to be all about.
Okay,
as
Dr.
Always.
Jones is the situation reporter here on BGR.
Oh, yeah.
I always forget, and as always, thank you for your time. And Cameron, who stuck it out the whole show, can't even thank you enough for being our guest, my friend. You are always welcome back here. Although I may be looking for a co-host soon, I don't know if everyone's aware of where Annie and her ratings are shooting off the hook. She might be abandoning me for ABC or NBC or God forbid we see her on MSNBC. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Southern Sense on MSNBC.
Right, when pigs fly.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. It was an absolute pleasure, and I'd love to come back sometime again.
Oh, you are always welcome back aboard, always. And it's a shame we didn't talk much about your company, but I think you with your publicist should be able to help a lot of these candidates knock out these progressives.
I'll just give a plug to the website or to the face. It's Maple Star Music Media, and you can find us on Facebook, and we'd love to help somebody.
Okay, thank you, Cameron. We'll be talking with you.
Thank you very much, Anne.
All right, that was Cameron Twilby, and we had our other guest, Kurt Adams, who's running for Congress out of Arizona. Mike, we got a good show coming up on Friday. We've got your favorite person, our South Carolina GOP chair, Chad Conley.
I am so excited for having this guy. Anybody, everyone, spread the word about a true conservative. And when I say those words, you're going to say, yeah, we know. No. Trust me. This guy rocks. I'm really excited about him for Friday.
All right. Well, his Kurt Adams primary is coming up in 2 weeks. But you've got to remember, if you're in Connecticut, Florida, Minnesota, or Wisconsin, get off the couch, turn off the TV, and go out and vote. You got primaries. Again, Connecticut and Florida, major primaries, Minnesota and Wisconsin. So if you're in any of those four states, turn off the TV, get out the front door, and go and vote in those primaries. We'll see you all then again on Friday, same bat time, same bat station, and our guest is going to be Chad Conley, our South Carolina GOP chair. So until then, have a healthy, happy, and safe week, and God bless.
Good afternoon, everyone.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
American.